Hi, friends. Welcome back to Out of Focus. I'm Shannon Stewart, and today I am joined by my incredible, awesome, amazing, hot husband, Mike.
She wants something.
I don't want anything. I'm so excited for you to be on here again and share your story. You have so many layers to you. Incredible.
I call it fat, but thank you for calling it layers.
That's hilarious.
That is so politically correct.
But that may not stop you from getting some ice cream today on this beautiful.
It is very possible that could happen. Yeah.
Is that your favorite dessert?
82 degrees today. Yeah.
Is that your favorite sweet treat?
Butter pecan is calling me.
My favorite thing would probably be donuts, but I do like ice cream when it's warm outside. It is so refreshing.
It's going to be one of those days.
So today we're going to talk about sharing our faith. A lot of Christians feel uncomfortable talking about their faith today. Why do you think that is?
I think part of it is we don't like rejection. So if we share and they don't listen to what we say, or maybe it offends them, I think most people don't want to offend people. I think there's some people who don't mind. But if you truly are trying to share your faith in a way that it impacts another person, you don't want to offend them. And then there's the fear of rejection. Like, okay, what if I share my faith with you and now it's awkward and it hurts our relationship? I think it's those kinds of things. It's just, plus, what if we get asked a question we don't know the answer to?
That's like, true.
Oh, no, now what do I do?
That's true.
So I think there's all kinds of reasons like that. But a lot of it's just kind of rooted in pride, insecurity. Sometimes I think it's because we feel like we have to do it. It's like, oh, I got to do this whether I want to or not. Instead of realizing, man, I've got something incredible to share with you. And if you reject it, see, it's not on me. It's like, I'm just going to share it with you. So I think that's all part of it.
Some people say the faith is a private thing. It's between you and God and shouldn't be shared. Is that actually biblical?
I think it goes back to motive. If I know that you're searching for something and I feel like, well, I may have the answer, I'm sharing it now because I love you and I care about you. And I want you to experience what I've experienced by accepting Christ as my Savior. If I want to get another win and I'm out to win you over, I think that's a lot different. When I was growing up, we used to do that thing where we'd go knock on people's door and say, hey, I'm from the church. Do you know Jesus? If not, you're going to go to hell.
Somebody came to our house one time when you were home. It freaked me out because nobody knew where we lived.
I'm sure there are stories where people are like, yes, please come in and tell me. But more often than not, it's like, oh, no, thank you. I think of sharing our faith more as a lifestyle. It's more relational. You build relationships with people and you hope that they see a difference in you to where they start to ask questions. Like, why do you go to church? Or why do you read the Bible? Or it seems like the world is burning to the ground and you seem to have a little peace about it. Why is that? And so that's what you're hoping for. Yeah. And then it's more natural. It's just a natural relationship. Hey, why do you take this vitamin or this supplement? Oh, let me tell you why. I just think that the relationship, I like to call it lifestyle. You just kind of live your faith as a lifestyle, not as a goal to win somebody. I think that makes a big difference.
Some people aren't Christians at their jobs or workplaces and they separate the two, but really we're Christians 24/7. We don't always have to share our faith necessarily by giving verses to people or cramming it down their throats. But like you said, it's in the way we live our lives that can testify to what our beliefs are in Jesus.
Well, it's like Paul, when he wrote the letter to the church in Philippi, the book of Philippians, he says, so that we can be stars, and stars give light.
I want to be a star.
But they don't talk.
And oh, so it's I don't know if that will work for me. Well, I love talking.
I think it goes back to the same thing where Jesus talked about in Matthew 5 about being salt and light. It's how do we influence and impact people in a way without really having to say anything to where they're like, man, there's something different about you. I always said, why would somebody want what you have if you're no different than who they are?
True.
I mean, if you have the same fears, the same stress, the same anxiety about the future, you don't handle difficult times any differently than they do. Why would they want what you have? And so it's not about what you say. It really is more about your actions and your lifestyle that should lead to that conversation. And then it's not a matter of rejection. I used to tell people, you have conversations and you can immediately tell when the wall goes up. I'm like, okay, that's as far as this conversation is going to go. I'll never forget, there was a guy at the gym. His name was Lou. And he knew I was a minister. And so I think everybody thinks when you're a minister, you're a hired gun.
Although you do have a lot of people that don't think you're a minister by how you look.
The greatest compliment is you don't look like a minister.
They think you're in the military or something. Yeah.
Somebody thought I was the lead singer in a heavy metal band the other day at the gym. I appreciated that. But he knew, you know, I was a person of strong faith, but I was also just a good friend to him. And I remember one time I was on the machine doing dips and I was waiting for my next set. He walked up and he said, "Hey, I got a question for you." I said, "What's that?" He said, "Can you know without a doubt that when you die, you'll go to heaven?" And my response is, "That's what the Bible says, so I'm going to go with that." And I left it at that. And my point was, I was waiting for him to ask the questions. Well, you know what? Eventually he made that decision. But I never had to corner him. I never had to say, you know, "You're going to go to hell." He saw the difference. Eventually, when a crisis came, I used to call it, you wait for a crack to appear in the rim of the cup of their life. Like, they may have a great life. Like, why do I need Jesus? But then all of a sudden, if a marriage goes off the rails or a kid goes off the rails or they lose their job or life's not going, all of a sudden they might be more interested. Like, "Hey, you've gone through the same thing, but you seem to have handled it differently. Tell me why." And so that's really what you're hoping for. You want your faith to shine without having to convince people all the time that you have faith. And that's what they need. So it's just a different approach.
When Jesus said we should be his witnesses, what did he actually mean by that?
Think about it. A witness is just sharing something that you've experienced. So if you see an accident and you hang around and the police come and say, "Would you come to court?" Well, if you go to court, you just testify to what you've seen. When you're sharing your faith, you're really telling your story. It's your story. It's what you've experienced. And no one can deny what you've experienced. When I witness, which is a word that scares Christians to death, really I'm saying, this is who I was before I met Jesus. This is how I met Jesus. This is how my life has changed. And then again, it's up to them whether they're like, "Tell me more about it." Or, "Wow, I'm glad that worked out for you." But again, you always want to walk away from a conversation where the friendship relationship is still intact. And hopefully you continue to live it and by your actions. And then one day they come back with another question. You just go on that journey with them.
Jesus told his followers in Acts 1:8 to be witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. What does that look like in everyday life?
I mean, there's always ways you could describe it. When I think of Jerusalem, I think of the people that I rub shoulders with every day, neighbors, the people at the gym, people in our church. It's the people you have relationships with. Judea would probably spread out. There's people around you who are like you, but you don't necessarily know them. When I think of Samaria, I think of people who they may live around you, but they're different than you. They may come from a different economic level. You may be living in the suburbs. They may live in the inner city. They may be from a different country, have a different culture. So when you think about Samaria, it was where people that were half Jew and half not Jew. And so the Jews didn't like them, but they had so much in common. So they were different, but in many ways they were the same. You have to figure out, how do you cross that bridge? And sometimes you have to be very specific about that. For example, we live in a very nice neighborhood. Most people do. You're probably not going to look out your door one morning and see a homeless drunk into the gutter, right? But if we went a few miles, there are parts where we would see people that would be their existence. And sometimes you have to put yourself into that environment, but that would be the Samaria. And so you have to go a little bit. And then to the ends of the earth is to the ends of the earth. And I've actually been to a pygmy village in the Central African Republic that the pygmies called the end of the world. That was what they called their village. And it was right on the border of Central African Republic, which I think at that time was the poorest country in the world, in Cameroon, bordered by the Congo.
Did you sleep in a tent?
Literally, they looked like igloos, but they were made out of palm branches, thatch.
Wow.
Out in the middle of the rainforest.
And how long were you there for?
We would go for a couple of weeks
at a time. Is this the place you went that only had one flight a week?
Yes. You went through Paris. You arrived on an Air France flight at about 5 a.m. The crew spent the night, flew out that night at midnight, and didn't come back till the next Thursday. And so once you were there, if you had to leave the country, you had to figure out how to cross over to Cameroon, or you hope not, but the Congo, and then maybe you could get a flight out of there. So when you went in, you were committed to be there for a while.
What did you go there to do?
We went with a whole different approach. We obviously wanted to expose them to the gospel. But I worked with a friend of mine and we drilled wells. We raised money. We went into villages that had never had clean drinking water. They would drink water out of the same creek where they went to the restroom, where they washed their clothes. And at that time, I think the lifespan for a man was like 39. A woman was about 42. Their average income was like $20 a month. And that they still lived in these huts and cooked on fires and got their water out of the creeks. So we went in and we helped them dig latrines and teach them sanitation. But we also drilled wells. We brought in rigs, drilled wells, and provided them with fresh drinking water. And then we used that as an opportunity to bring in an African Sango-speaking pastor who would start a church in these little villages. And it was amazing because we would literally go back a year later and 90% of the village would have converted to Christianity. I think part of it is because you just showed the love of Jesus to them. We didn't go in there and just say, hey, we're going to teach you the Bible. We went in and loved them. And then the rest was part of the journey.
I'm sure you changed their lives by giving them clean drinking water.
Yeah. It literally changed their health in a way that you can't even imagine. In Haiti, I did a lot of work in Haiti, took a different approach. We went in and built a medical clinic out in an area. It was really only about 40 miles outside of Port-au-Prince, but it would take you 8 hours to get there.
Wow.
Part of it, I'd say the last 10 miles, you had to drive down a river. And if the river was at high stage, you couldn't get there or you couldn't get away once you had gotten there. But we started a medical clinic. I remember the first week we went, we slept out in tents. You could hear the voodoo witch doctors off in the distance pounding the drums. They would get closer every night because they didn't really like us being there. But in about 4 days, we saw 2,400 people who had never seen a professional medical person in their life and were able to help a lot of ladies who were pregnant with prenatal vitamins and a lot of things that we were able to do there. But again, we didn't go there to have church services. We went there to love these people where they were. And then through the process, many of them obviously accepted Christ and came into the family of God. Been in prisons in Medellin, Colombia.
Tell me about that. Maximum security, right?
Yeah, you literally had to get fingerprinted to get in and then fingerprinted to get out. And it was where a lot of the...
Escobar, you said, right?
Yeah, Pablo Escobar's cohorts ended up in prison. There was one of the Escobar's assassins who had become a Christian while in prison. And then he began a ministry in prison. And eventually he got out. He was supposed to serve 60-some years. I think he served like 13. But then he decided to keep going back in the prison and teaching the Bible. And so I spoke at the graduation of about 200 men who had gone through a theological training, had accepted Jesus. They were probably going to spend the rest of their lives in that prison, but their life had changed. They now had purpose. Again, it's just not about trying to get people around the throat and say, you got to believe. Jesus never did that. Jesus went around and loved people, and they responded to him. And so I think there are a lot of similarities that way.
Were you ever scared going to these places?
Yes. I remember one time, Central African Republic, at that time, I don't think they had an election in 60 years. And what would happen, somebody would come in from another country with a bunch of guerrillas, some kind of military, overthrow whoever was in charge. They would take over to the next army came in, and a lot of guerrillas. But then the country was so poor, it wasn't like they could pay these soldiers. So anytime you left, Bangui was the capital. Anytime you left Bangui to head out into the jungle, to the areas where we would minister, often these soldiers would set up roadblocks and stop you. And we kind of stood out. They would shake you down. They would want money, whatever you had. But this is how poor they were. I remember one time it was me, a guy that I was traveling with, and Jim, who was our host who lived there. And we got to a roadblock. They'd put a tree across the road and really a path. And we got out, and there was just some really heated discussion between Jim, who grew up there, so he spoke the language Sango, and the soldiers. And they took our passports, and at one point, they pointed a gun at us.
I would have been so scared.
And I was. You just don't expect that. And, of course, you're out in the middle of the jungle. They could have shot us, thrown us in the river, and no one would have ever even known. But eventually, you could tell the conversation changed, and they returned to Jim our passports. There was some padding on the back.
Wow.
And we got back in the Jeep. And I'm like, what just happened? Jim had lived there, so he had encountered this many times. And he said, well, we're going to come back through here in a few days. And if you treat us with respect and are nice to us, we will have something for you. And they let us go. And I told Jim, I said, Jim, they pointed a gun right at my head. And he said, oh, I wouldn't worry about it. He says, I doubt they even have the money to have bullets in those guns. And I'm like, I don't want my epitaph to be they had one. But sure enough, we came back in a few days, and Jim gave them a gospel pamphlet that shared the gospel in Songo, explained who Jesus was, how you could have eternal life through him, and a ballpoint pen. And you would have thought they had won the lottery. They were so excited to have a pen, just a pen. We can't even comprehend that.
We cannot.
Just a pen to write with, right? We were out one time, and we were in these little huts, and Jim came in at night, and of course, we always took mosquito nets with us, and he was really pushing them up under my sleeping bag. And I said, wow, these mosquitoes must be vicious. He said, nah, it's the snakes. So they had two snakes there, a black mamba and a green mamba. They called them the two-step snakes. That they bit you, you took two steps, and you died. And so he said, I just want to make sure the snakes don't get in. But then before he left, and of course, Jim was fearless, he said, oh, by the way, if you get up to go to the restroom in the middle of the night, check your boots, because they love to get in your boots because your boots are warm from you wearing them. And so And so I remember one night going out to go to the restroom, my flashlight went out. And
I don't know if I would be able to sleep.
It was the scariest thing in the world. And I'm shaking that flashlight, and it finally came back on. But yeah, there were some of those things. But on the other side, when you got to know the people, they were just the most loving. I've been in huts where the chief of the village, if they had a chicken, they were going to serve you the chicken. Oh. You were a special guest. And you would sit literally on the ground and have dinner with them. And their gratitude was just so amazing. But see, when Jesus said the fields are widened to harvest, I think America, Europe, we're kind of saturated with the good news, the gospel. Yeah, take it or leave it. We feel we're pretty good. We don't need that stuff. But when you go somewhere where they have nothing and they realize that their life on this earth isn't going to change that much, but when they die, they get to go to this place called heaven, they're much more open. And you literally see the life change. Like I said, we went into one village one time, and it was dark. A lot of them would go out and hunt in the jungle. They would actually lead safaris for wealthy Europeans and Americans that would come in. And there was some kind of wacky weed they would smoke out in the jungle. And so we were there, and a lot of them were high and kind of immoral acting and doing those kinds of things. You could just feel the darkness, right? And we drilled a well and helped them, and actually we gave them seeds where they could start gardens and things like that. Went back in 1 year, and the village had totally changed. A pastor had moved in, started a church. In fact, I had a couple of guys with me that time that had some musical talent, and they had the guitars, and we sat around a fire, and they were so excited they made coffee for us. I'll never forget that. And we would sing like one of our worship songs from the States, and then they would sing one of their worship songs in this five-part harmony in Songo. And it would just send chills up and down your spine. So you would see what Jesus could do even in the remotest parts of the earth. So, yeah.
Made me think of Unknown Nations. Our church partnered with them to send solar Bibles to people who have never heard the gospel.
One of the coolest ideas I've ever heard of. They look like they're like a phone, but half the size of an Apple phone.
Almost like a flip phone. They're kind of smaller.
And they have the entire Bible recorded on it in their language, and it's solar powered. And so it completely can keep recharging. And people are just hearing the Bible, hearing the gospel, hearing about Jesus, and are giving their lives to Christ, starting churches. They don't even have any instruction. This is where people have never been. I think there's 7,200 unreached people groups on planet Earth that have never heard the name of Jesus. It's about 3.4 billion people. They're getting these. They call them the treasures.
I love that. Yes.
They're getting these little, and typically one will minister to like eight people. They'll be sharing it. And there's stories. We saw one video where they were in Pakistan working in the brick yards, the poverty level, human trafficking. And they literally are tying them to their heads. So the solar power.
I was going
to
bring that up.
Listening with their earpieces to the Bible all day long.
Isn't it, though, such a vast difference between Americans and them? We are so exposed. We have the Bible, and it's dusty because we never pick it up to
Some
read
Christians
it.
Christians have five or six Bibles.
Exactly.
Right.
And they
can't find a one of them.
Yeah. They don't have time. They don't make time. But their lives are being radically changed, and they're like a sponge. They want to hear more about it. They can't get enough of the Bible, and they're taping it to their head. It's their treasure. It's their lifeline, and it's really convicting as a Christian here in America. because we have it and we can read it and we don't.
I actually think I have the gift of evangelism, but I don't like sitting down presenting, okay, here's the five steps to becoming a Christian. That's just not how I'm wired. But I love building relationships with people. And if you're really salt and light, eventually they're going to say, there's something different about you. Or they're going to pick up on something. Or they're going to be like, hey, you want to grab a cup of coffee? They don't even know why, but they like you. But God will open a door and give you an opportunity to share.
Since you brought up salt and light, for people that are listening or watching on YouTube that don't understand, what does that mean practically?
Light provides light. Wherever it goes, it shines in the darkness. Salt was a preservative. It protected. And so Jesus is like, I want you to have that kind of influence on people. Salt and light both influence people. And he didn't talk about talking. He said, they'll see your good deeds when you live like I want you to live, and they'll give glory, not to you, but to your Father in heaven. In other words, they will see Jesus through you. You become the hands, the feet, the mouth of Jesus, and that's what you want people to see. I think of it this way. Let's say you had cancer, and somebody came up to you and said, hey, I'm going to tell you something, but I know this doctor, and he has a pill that will cure your cancer. It's not approved by the FDA, but I'm just telling you, if you go see him and tell him I sent you, if you went and that doctor went over, opened a safe, gave you one pill, you took it, you came back in a few weeks, and there was no sign of cancer. I'm telling you, everybody you met after that, and you found out they had cancer, they said, here's a guy you got to meet. I think in the same way, that's our faith. If we really, really understand what Jesus Christ has done for us, that our sins have been forgiven, that we get to live an abundant life now, that we begin to see things from a different perspective, that whatever we're going through, Philippians 1:6 says, he who began a good work in you, that's salvation, will be faithful to complete it. That's sanctification, that's transforming your life. If we can understand that we get that life now, and when we take our last breath on earth, we get to take our next breath in heaven for all eternity. If we were really excited about that, we're surrounded every day by people who are just lost. They have no direction. They think they're happy because they got a nice house and a nice car, but they don't think about, is there anything more to this earth than is there anything next? If we really believe that Jesus Christ would change lives, we would want people to know there's hope. And that's really what you're offering, is hope. But I just think I've shared the gospel with people and they said no. And we walked away still being best friends. You know, and I'm like, well, if they ask again, we'll have that conversation again. But that shouldn't be your goal. That shouldn't be your goal, like I said, to get another notch. Like, hey, I've told you before, I have never met anyone who said, okay, all right, you had the better argument, I'll be a Christian. No, they're not gonna, you can't fight, you can't argue, you can't debate. There's something that the Holy Spirit also has to do in someone's life that you have zero control over. And so you do your part and you leave it up to God to do his part.
So what's the difference between sharing your faith and trying to win an argument?
I think sharing your faith is like, oh, you want to know what's different? I'll tell you. Trying to win an argument is, listen, you need to listen to me. And I'm going to tell you why the Bible's God's word and why you can trust in it. And then the debates get going about evolution or creation or angels real. And you just get off track. That's really not the point. I'm never going to argue you in. Well, you're so stubborn, I can't argue you in anything anyway. You got your dad from you. But anyway.
Oh, really?
I'm not stubborn. Really, when you think about it, you're asking someone to trust their whole life into something they can't see.
True.
You're not going to debate or argue somebody into that. That's just a journey they're going to have to go on. And maybe God will use you in the process. Paul said, some plant a seed. Somebody else may come along in 5 years and water the seed. But only God gives the increase. So somebody may ask you a question and you may just answer it. They may not be interested. But a year later, someone else may add to that. And you're just like a link in the chain. And then one day God says, I'll bring the increase. I'll bring the harvest.
You said something interesting before. People should be able to look at your life and ask, why are you different? What should people actually see in a Christian's life?
Joy. One thing is definitely joy. We're studying through the book of Philippians about how you can have joy regardless of your circumstances. And like I said, Paul was under Roman house arrest, chained to a soldier. And he's writing these Christians in Philippi saying, hey man, you need to be joyful. But he's looking at everything through the perspective of God has a perfect plan, which sometimes means heartache, sometimes means suffering, But see, if you realize that God really is at work and this is a part of his plan, and it's hard. I'm not saying it's hard. It's so much easier to say, oh, Shannon, I know you're going through this hard time, but God's at work in your life. It's easy for me to say that. But all of a sudden, when my crisis hits, it's a little bit harder, okay? But the reality is, if you can get that perspective, like even recently, you've had some things that have disappointed you.
Crushed me, yes. Yeah. Yes. And it's hard to see God because we know God is good. He's gracious, merciful, long-suffering, kind, patient, majestic. And I know his ways are higher and his thoughts are far grander than mine could ever be. But in the moment, you do wonder why.
But again, we just had this conversation this week. I said, what if it's just the timing? What if this is still a part of God's plan, but he has a better timing? And if you can get to the point where you can begin to see, oh yeah, I forgot. He who began a good work in you is faithful to complete it. All things work together for good to those who love God and are called according to his purpose. Do you really believe it or you don't? So if you really believe it, yeah, do we get caught up with emotional when we get a bad medical report or you get laid off? Absolutely. But if you can then step back and say, well, wait a second, God's promised me this. And so I may not like what I'm going through, but I know that what I'm going through, he's going through with me and he's going to bring me out the other side.
I did something different this time. I surrendered it back and gave it to him at the altar because what I want is not this thing. I want him. And if he doesn't want me to have it, then I don't want it. I don't want any idols. I don't want any gods. I don't want to repeat old patterns and question who he is and his character because that led me down a really bad path. I know he's good. And when my feelings and my emotions tell me otherwise, I'm going to stand on truth.
Yeah. And I don't think you're being honest if you don't say you don't have doubts at times.
Oh, of course. I told you I was crushed.
Yeah. I mean, all of us, humanity. Yes. You can be the strongest Christian in the world, but there are times you're like, all right, God, went through, I called it the trifecta, where I got diagnosed with cancer, dropped a weight on my crushed it, driving my Corvette at 60 miles an hour at 5 a.m, going to train somebody at the gym and hit a big old buck deer. You know, just like, okay, God, what do? You have a pity party. Like, oh, but then you realize, okay, God, obviously you're trying to do something. So let me step back here and try to get what I'm missing. And then you realize, okay, he's at work. He's at work. And I may not even know what the outcome's going to be. But I have to trust him. And okay, I'm going to have some joy in the process because I know he's in control.
And I listened to your message, and it was a great reminder. I already knew it, but it was great to hear it again, that we will keep going through the same thing, the same testing, the same trial, the same lesson until we learn and grasp what God is trying to teach us.
Yep. I said one of the most asked questions I get, why do I keep going through the same thing? And it's usually bad financial choices, bad relationship choice, whatever it is. And seriously, the answer is God's testing you. He's going to take you through trials, but you got to pass the test. You got to learn what you need to learn. Then he'll move on to a new trial.
Today, people might be very skeptical of Christianity. How can believers share their faith without sounding judgmental or pushy?
Again, you're a witness. This is my story. Do what you want with it. I'm going to love you regardless. That's what people need to understand. I'm not going to reject you regardless. The reality is this, they're not rejecting me. They may be rejecting a relationship with God through Jesus, but that's their thing. That's their choice. But that doesn't mean I can't love them unconditionally. So again, it goes back to what your motives. If it's pride, you just want to say I led someone to Christ, or if it's just, you know what? Again, we are called to be witnesses. And a witness just says, this is what I've experienced.
I thought about my mom because she used to work at Delphi. She was surrounded by a bunch of men and they saw the way she lived. She was on time, a very hard worker. She had a good attitude. She had joy, like you said. So eventually some of her coworkers asked, what is it about you? Why are you so happy? And then that gave her a road and a pathway and an opening to be able to share the gospel with them. And a few of them came to know the Lord. They gave their life to the Lord.
That's a whole nother podcast, but
yes,
I think most people's perception of Christian is we're mean, we're negative, we're bitter, we're judgmental. And I think that's where salt and light comes in. We're living the opposite of that.
What would you say to someone who feels unqualified or they feel nervous to talk about Jesus?
It's not winning an argument. It's not a debate. I've had people, and I've been a pastor for years, people ask me questions all the time. I'm like, you know what? I don't know the answer to that, but I will get back to you. And so it's okay. And I think that's a big fear people have. Well, what if they ask me this and I don't know the answer? They'll just say, I don't know the answer, but I'll find it. I know somebody that does know the answer. Again, you want to go as far as people want to go. Like, hey, this is what happened to me. Well, how do you know this? I don't know, but I'll get the answer. And again, it's not about a win or lose. It's just about a journey. This is my experience. I can tell you what God did for me, but it's up to you.
You said a witness is simply someone telling their story of what they've seen or experienced. What has Jesus personally done in your life that you cannot stay silent about?
I would say most recently restored me. I think a lot of people, they just blow it and they feel God's finished with them. And unfortunately, there's a lot of Christians who think that when you blow it, God's finished with you. And I came across a definition of grace one time that's God's insatiable desire to not only forgive you, but to bless you. And I didn't believe that, but he has proven that. And so it's like when you get a second chance, I shared Sunday, there are people in the Bible who had great starts, but they didn't finish strong. Lot, Samson, he got caught up with Delilah. Saul, gracious, humble, ended up taking his own life. But then you got story after story of Abraham, of Moses, of David, and you could go on and on. Rahab, where, yeah, they got off course during the journey, but they finished strong. What Paul said was, forgetting what lies behind, I'm going to press on. And it is hard to forget. It was really, really, and there are still days where it will come back and haunt me a little bit. But you have to remember that's the past, and you can't undo the past, and you can press on. I just want people to know that God is never, ever finished with you. And it really is up to you. The ball's in your court. Do you want to finish strong or not? Satan will try to keep you wallowing in your past, defeated. And that's a victory, because if you're defeated, you're not going to have any impact in the kingdom. So at least he's neutralized you, right? But if you can remember that you have a story, the stories we love in the Bible, the stories we love to go see at the movies are redemption stories. That's why we watch those stupid Hallmark Christmas movies, because they break up and it's heartbreak. Then they all get together and it starts snowing again and they all live happily. We love that kind of stuff. And so your story, no matter how dark it may have been at some point, may be the very thing that impacts someone and speaks to their heart. You can talk in theory. For years, I talked about God's grace and forgiveness. But boy, when you find yourself on your knees, you don't even feel like life's worth living. And you cry out and he responds. It's almost like he picks you up, hugs you, says, now let me dust you off. There's going to be some scars, but we're moving forward. We're moving forward. I got a future for you. That's something you want to share with other people.
Mine would be the same thing, God's grace. It's used to be a theory. I used to talk about it. But when you're in the rubble of your own mess and you experience it, it's life-changing. And I want other people to know that they aren't too far gone. They haven't done too much. His grace is enough. And he can redeem them, restore them, rewrite their story, and use what they did for his glory and even for their good, because that's who he is.
Yep.
If every Christian simply lived out their faith authentically, how different do you think the world would look?
Well, think of it this way. Say there's a legitimately 100 million Christians in America, just America. If over the next year, we invested in one person, loved one person, was salt and light around, if one person decided to follow Jesus, it would double in 1 year. That'd go to 200 million. And if everybody did that the next year, it would go to 400 million. But before long, it's going to have a shaping influence on the world. I'm sorry, but I think Christians too, these days, we're too wrapped up in politics and the way the world's going. I tell people all the time, if you're really a believer, like what's going on in Iran and the Middle East is like, well, the Bible said things like this are going to happen. But hey, guess what? I'm going to come out the other side and I'm going to be fine. So I'm going to leave all that up to God.
I like Billy Graham's quote. He said, I've read the last page of the Bible. It's all going to turn out all right.
Yeah. If you're a follower of Jesus, you've given your heart to Jesus, you're going to be. Now, does that mean we may not go through tough times? Yeah. But see, I know the end. And so I don't have to worry and fret. And so I think as Christians, we get too consumed sometimes with what's going on around us instead of just accepting sometimes. I tell people, somebody has to be here when it all goes down and when Christ returns. I mean, how cool would it be to have a front row seat? But that doesn't mean that you won't go through some times of suffering and hardship to get there. There's a confidence. It's like Paul. Paul, I'm confident that Paul knew when he wrote that book to the Philippians. I think he already knew that Nero was going to chop his head off and that he was going to be martyred that way. Jesus in John 16 said to the disciples before he went to the Garden of Gethsemane, ended up on the cross, he said, there's going to come a day where people are going to think they're doing God a favor to kill you. And every one of those guys sitting in that room died a martyr's death, except John, who they tried to kill him. They tried to boil him to death in a pot of oil and he wouldn't die. And so it freaked him out so bad. They said, we're going to send you to the Isle of Patmos and just leave you there to die, where he probably lived to the hundreds, where he wrote the book of Revelation. But he told them right there in John 16, there's going to come a day when people on this earth are going to think they're doing God a favor to kill you. But that's okay. You're going to have peace because I've come to give you peace. And every one of them died for their faith, died for seeing a resurrected Jesus. So there's our role model. There's our role model.
I want to leave you guys with a question to ponder this week. If someone watched your life for a week, would they be able to tell you follow Jesus?
That's a great question. They may not know that, but they would know something's different. They would look at you and say, there's something different about you. And I just think it's putting a smile on your face, being friendly to people, loving people where they are, just loving them.
I mean, I have to love you right where you are.
And that is not easy. That is not easy at all.
I'm kidding. You're a good man. You're a good, godly man. And I know you would do anything for me as long as it's not a sin. You love me that much. You would give up something in order for me to have it. It's a sacrificial love.
Yep. I love you almost as much as I love the Duke Blue Devils.
I thought you were going to say ice cream. I thought we were bringing it back to ice cream.
Well, butter pecan, that's in a league all by itself.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting me here.
You want to help me with the end? Do you remember? You've been on here several times.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Remember, when life feels out of focus,
put it back in focus.
There is always one who brings clarity. We'll see you next time.